D72 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Geeksters episode 119. Tonight, it's just me. Unfortunately, Mitch and Tim and Fred were not able to join us, but that's okay. They're getting ready to get things done. They're busy with life, and you know, that's, and such is life. Things go on. But tonight, I have a guest with us tonight. I have tweeted about him. You guys have probably heard about him. He's in other podcasts. He's kind of a big name. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce Mr. Brian Lunduke. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. I'm kind of a big
name. People...
I'm totally kind of a big name. I'm a big deal. It's nothing special. I'm just kind of a big deal right now.
Well, this is a show, Brian. Geeksters is a show where we just...
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever
I don't
heard.
Know what to say. I mean, I get, you know, we're just going to leave it in there. I had one podcast where literally for the first 10 minutes, I called everybody Fred. I couldn't get it out of my head. Everybody was called Fred. So,
well, that works.
You know...
You can call me Fred if you want. It's not that big a deal. I don't mind.
I mean, for not coming up with a great intro, it could be worse. I could be calling you by somebody else's name. But I can't because my brother's name is Brian. So, really.
Dude, don't sell yourself short. That was a rockin' intro.
Yes. Okay. So, this is a show, Geeksters. And we talk about anything from tech to things that are going on. We talk about iPhones and tablets. And, I mean, really, it's just kind of the life of a tech. And what do we do? And so, I want to bring you on because we met originally, the first time we ever met was a couple years ago. Linux Fest Northwest up in Bellingham, Washington. You at the time were rocking a pretty good stash. My son kept pointing it out, and he kept wanting to say nice stash. And I'm like, all right, that's enough.
To his defense, it was a really rocking stash.
I didn't want him to say it too many times.
Okay, it does get a little weird after
it was
a while.
Unfortunately, he was reaching the weird point. But that was the first time that I had a chance to sit down. Well, one, meet you in person. And two, listen to your Linux Sucks, Linux Doesn't Suck show.
The thing I do.
I was really surprised right off the bat. One of the first things that caught my attention was it was the same slide deck. And I think people who have seen it before are like, oh, okay. And other people, you can always tell who's new because we go, oh, this is going to be great. And I remember that. That was one of the things that I took away was that I said, it's the same slide deck. That's awesome. Because anyways, we'll get into that. But
sure.
I digress. And if you ever listen to the show, we do digress quite a bit. What I want to do was just people, when I mentioned that you were going to be on the show, I heard a lot of, oh, that's great. That's awesome. We're going to listen. And then some people saying, I don't know who he is. So who are you? Who is Brian Lunduke?
I don't know, man. So I'm not sure. Different ways you might know me. I wrote some ridiculous comic books, and I wrote a book called Linux's... can I say the word badass on this show?
Yes.
I just did. I wrote a book called Linux's That Word. I don't know if I can say that on the show. And I wrote a children's book about Linux. I founded and co-hosted the Linux Action Show for a lot of years. I currently do a show with John O'Bacon and some other guys called Bad Voltage, which some of you might or might not know about, but probably don't, because it's just me and John O'Bacon and some other guys sitting around.
Well, but who are the other guys though? Because they got names too.
It actually is big names. So one of the guys is linuxquestions.org with Jeremy Garcia, very, very cool dude, runs that whole website, that whole network of websites, which is like, really is. Linuxquestions.org is an awesome, awesome forum, basically is all it is. But it's like the world's biggest Linuxy forum. It's fantastic. And then also Stuart Langridge, who used to do all the old Lug radio shows with John O'Bacon. They just had a lot of fun. And he used to work for Canonical. And it's just generally a good dude. So the four of us sit around and just kind of chat, basically.
And I have... So
I do all that, and then I also work with Sousa. I run all their social media. So if you see Sousa talking about anything on the internet, on like Twitter or anything, that's all me, baby. They pay me to tweet about Linux, which is ridiculous, but great.
Do you tweet from a Mac or a Windows box?
Oh, yeah, just, you know, from a nice little Windows phone with a nice Metro interface. No, I don't do that.
Windows 8.1 for the win.
I got... I actually, in case you're anyone's curious, which you totally should not be, I got my little OpenSUSE 13.1 box here, sitting here. I was running GNOME Shell on this for the longest time, which I was loving, and I recently just got mega bored with it, so now it's running Enlightenment, which is beautiful and awesome and buggy, and I'm loving
it. So that's your preferred desktop environment?
No, I don't know. For, I don't have
for
one.
Today it is?
For today, yeah. Yeah, it'll probably might be my preferred through Thursday, is my guess.
I'm gonna put hands down. Oh wait, tomorrow's Wednesday, huh? So I can't. Never mind. I was gonna bet on tomorrow, but that's pretty easy. That's an easy one to lose. So never mind. Easy. Yeah. On the show, we do have some people who use Linux. One of the hosts, Mitch. He is a fan of Arch and has used Arch in the past. Nice. And I'm like, wow, that's hardcore. I don't even compile my own stuff. He likes Arch, and that's props to him. I'm still running some Ubuntu versions and Debian versions, but and
Arch is
it's just something I haven't ran yet. Hear it's red. I know
just
a lot of people
it,
who
take
say
the plunge.
It's red.
Stop pussyfooting around. Dive into Arch. Try it out. And this is coming from a SUSE guy. Like I love SUSE. I rock the green chameleon everywhere I go. I got the open SUSE running on everything. Still, try out Arch. Got to give it a spin, man. You're not a real man with a real neck beard until you try out Arch. That's the rules.
All right. What about Manjaro? That's kind of Arch. Count, you want the full you want uncut Arch?
Manjaro, that's like a 7-year-old girl's Linux distro. Come on, man. Get some. You need Gentoo, Arch, or Linux from scratch, or something like that. Otherwise, go big or go home is what I say. At least once. You don't have to stick to it, man.
At least I'm home, so I'm halfway there. Oh, you mean like
that's,
literally
that's a good
or
point.
Figuratively?
I hadn't really figured out if I meant it literally or figuratively, but I'd like you to take
All
it
right.
both ways.
Well, I'm halfway there because I'm physically, literally at home.
If I could give you a high five right now, I totally would.
Copy it on a, well, I was going to say photocopy your hand, and then I'll just self high five. You fax it to me.
You just say, I'll photocopy it and fax it. I'll Xerox that real quick.
Hold
for
on,
you.
While I fax this to you in my DPI. Anyways, so you do, I mean, so you're on the, you used to do the Linux Action Show for a long time. You do the Bad Voltage, the OpenSUSE, you write books. So what, right now, so you blog, you commentate, you do news, you're kind of just everything media.
Yeah, people just kind of pay me to talk about Linux, and that's pretty much the gist of it. I can talk about Linux however I want. I can be blasphemous. I can use dirty words. I can write kid stuff. I can do, I suppose I left out. I'm a frigging journalist, I guess. I don't know what the heck that you'd call it, but I write for IDG and Network World, Linux.com, Ubuntu User Magazine, things like that. So basically, if it's a Linux magazine and website, 50-50 odds, I write articles for them now, it seems like. So I just do that stuff. I don't know exactly if I have a job or what my job would be if you said a title. Like, I don't think I have one. A Linuxy dude, maybe, is the closest thing I have.
So you don't do anything on the Windows or Android or Apple markets. You're just, I mean, your sole, not to slam them, but just say that your sole, your sole job is.
You can slam them if you want to.
But your sole thing.
I'm going to tweet about it right now. Martin Obando slamming Windows and Mac on his show. What a jerk.
All right.
I'm all Linux. I was a Mac guy for years. I made Mac software. Me and my wife started a Mac software company that we ran for years and years and years. We were Mac diehards. Apple glowing logos anywhere. We even had a Volkswagen Beetle with a big Apple sticker on the back of it because we were ridiculous, really.
Because you were young.
That's what we
young
did.
And
because we were young and
foolish in your ways.
And it's been a couple of years since I've had anything really that doesn't run Linux. Oh, wait, that's not true. I got to take that back. I have a tablet that I got for $50 when I bought a new laptop, and it's running Windows 8.1. It's one of those Windows tablets, and I can't friggin' get any distribution of Linux to work on that for more than 5 minutes, and we've been working on it for a long time. So technically, I do have a Windows 8 device here. That's the only one, but I do have that one, full disclosure. So for those of you who have lost all faith in me and humanity, I totally understand. You can stop listening to the show right now and never listen again. It's okay. I understand.
Well, no, I come back next week for
no,
for
it's
my
all right,
sake.
Guys. Just write it off. Write it off because Brian runs.
That's all right. We have, every, you just don't. Now, I work on So what I do is I'm kind of a systems and network administrator. I have my own company, and so I do a lot of some like managed services. So I'm contracted out by different companies to handle everything they need. I work in schools. I work in
nice.
Property management companies, pump manufacturing companies. So if you have a server or a network and you need something, you can contract with me. I do a little bit of web hosting on the side. So I kind of do the jack of all trades. So while I primarily run Linux as my main distro and have for many years, I really like it. Windows pays my bills. So
that's fine. No hard feelings. I don't judge. Well, I do. If you're anonymous and on the internet, I judge the heck out of you. But since we're in person and I see your face and I know your name, no judging.
And you know what town I live in, so.
Right. Ooh, so you're in Portland, right? So can I ask you a question? A serious, serious question. With your business, did you put a bird on
it? I have not.
Okay, well, you need to get on that. They might kick you out of Portland.
I have a unicycle and a beard.
Unicycle?
Was hoping that that would...
Oh, man.
No, I should get a unicycle, though.
Dude, you totally should. People with beards should always have unicycles. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm digressing this into the ground. What would you like to talk about today?
Well, no, that's just... man, there's just... It's been kind of a crazy week all around. We've had news all over the place. TrueCrypt, we had the TrueCrypt revelation that came out last week of whether or not it's good, it's bad. Who knows what that's going to do? I'm still kind of leaning on the fence to see what happens. I've heard from some people. Everybody on the show knows that I listen to Steve Gibson from Security Now. He keeps on top of a lot of that stuff. So it sounds like maybe TrueCrypt is just maybe they were just done. It was just time to move on.
I don't know, dude. I think this is the end of software as we know it. With the TrueCrypt news, I think at this point, by this point next week, all computers will stop working. We're done. That's it. Everyone's bank information is all public now too. It's done.
Well, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so.
So we had that information come out. One of the other information that came out was, well, some of my listeners would know, and you may probably don't know, but last December I was called into a client to consult for a construction company. They had been infected with the CryptoLocker virus. They had lost 70,000 files and almost $1 million worth of property. Because what had happened was a gentleman had received a PDF disguise or an executable disguise as a PDF in his email. He double-clicked on it, and it spread. It spread through the network. Of course, it jumped network drives. They had so much data that they didn't even realize they were infected for a week because it was just going through the data from and it starts in alphabetical order, and it just goes through an alphabetical and then subfolders and alphabetical and subfolders. So there's a method to its madness. But it wasn't until they got to a point where somebody said, hey, why are these files turning blue? And then why can't I click on them? Because CryptoLocker, it compresses the files and then encrypts them. So we pulled the system offline. As soon as you pull the primary system that was infected offline, all the encryption and everything stops. Okay. But what doesn't happen, though, is it doesn't finish. So you never get the prompt of pay us or we'll delete your data.
So it has to
fully go throughout everything. And so we pulled it offline. We figured out what was going on. We found out, this was days of work, found out where the data had stopped, what was good and what was bad. One of the first things was how's our network drives gone because it had jumped. Now this user did not have administrative rights. So what was nice about that is that it did not get into, the administrative server or the accounting server. So accounting data was still good, but what it did is it started to infect everything on the drive. Then they had DFS set up, so it was doing an exact duplicate copy to another server. And then their backups were just through a external hard drive that was a map drive. So we go to checking their backups, and their backups were all encrypted and compressed and gone. So they lost a lot of data. It was really, really awful. I was called in just to consult. I was not the primary technician on that, and I felt really bad because... It sucks. What they ended up doing was just saying we're gonna have to count our losses and just write off what we don't have anymore. And that's where it is.
Dude, seriously?
70,000. Yeah.
Oh my God.
It was pretty painful. And I thought I never ever want to be in that situation because it was awful. Right, and that was terrible. Last December. So that was during the height of the whole crypto locker thing. And a good friend of the network, his name is Nick Shaw. He writes D7 and D7.2, and he writes a program called Crypto Prevent. And what it does is it goes through into your local machine. This is a Windows application, of course, in your local machine. It will prevent crypto locker from running because it knows the signatures and knows how it also runs, so the way it accesses, interacts within the temp file. So if I had any local users, then I give them that. Anybody on a group policy or on a Windows network, I was able to create group policy scripts and block it that way. Everything was really quiet until last weekend. On Thursday night, I got a call from my sister and saying, hey, I double-clicked on this file, and now things aren't working right. And what happened was she received an email from ADP, which is the payroll service. And it wasn't from ADP, but she clicked on it. It was a screensaver, the .scr, statement.scr, or it was a statement.zip inside of that statement.scr. You run it, and it tries to run the screensaver, and then it fails, and or it doesn't fail, but then it kicks over to an executable, and then CryptoLocker gets installed. And so it was absolutely brutal. So we were able to get a lot of her data back up because she does use offsite storage. Like, she used Carbonite. Being that...
So she was okay.
She was kind of okay. She did lose some data that wasn't backed up to Carbonite. We're in the process of trying to resolve all that. But that was a system reload. Unfortunately, my sister works in the healthcare, and we had to, you know, to just make sure that everything was completely, you know, because when your computer's infected, can you really ever say that it's not vulnerable? Because it already has one infection. You can only clean it so much.
Yeah, you gotta wipe.
So Sunday I wiped. Reload it, get it back to her. So she's been working okay with it right now. Everything's back up and running. We didn't lose. I mean, the data that she lost was not, not detrimental. So she'll be able to get that back up and running. But
it wasn't mission critical.
But it made me, I mean, I was, gosh, Saturday night, dude, I was literally and physically, I was ill. I had a little mini panic attack. I'm trying to go to sleep at like 2 a.m. because I can't sleep, and I'm just so stressed out. So, we got up and running. Everything's fine. But CryptoLocker is still out there. And it's interesting because it had laid, you know, you don't hear about it too much. And what prompted my thought of this again was just yesterday, the government, and I can't find the news article, but it looks like the government was able to maybe find some of the people who were doing this. I don't know if you had read that. And so I wish I could find the article, but it looks like, so we're on the right path. But CryptoLocker is still out there. So if anybody doesn't, you know, is not running Crypto Prevent, you know, check that out at...
Or Linux.
Pardon me? Or Linux. Yeah, or Linux. That's, I mean, that's the one thing. That's why I booted up, just spun up a quick Linux box, and then actually in that machine right there over my shoulder, a hard drive in it, and then some Windows VM. So I was able to watch and see what it would do, how it would encrypt it. But that is one of the nice things that I have with my Linux box is I can take it into an infected network, plug it in, and not have to worry about it. It is very handy. And there's a lot of times where I'll get a call from a network saying, we don't know what's going on. I don't have to worry about that. I can just plug my network in or my computer into it.
You know, back when I was actually a software guy, and that's what I did, when we released software in order to make sure we were safe, we always did our releases from a dedicated standalone Linux box that was off to the side, because we knew then when we put all of our installers out that we weren't going to infect everyone, because we did that once and it was bad. things went really haywire when we started releasing software with a virus in it. So, yeah, we felt a little bad, so we made sure that never happened again. So, yeah, we actually had a little, at that time, it was just a Debian stable box, and that's all it did was just houses our installer scripts, builds our installers, and ship those suckers off.
Yeah.
Handy.
Yeah. So, I'm just thinking, but we got our backup running. But I went ahead and resent back out a couple of my clients, you know, hey, just notices, you might want to make sure you have this installed, because I don't want anybody to lose their data. And this isn't fake, you know, your data has just been, you know, or it's not one of those fake ransomware, like FBI caught you surfing something that you shouldn't be surfing on the internet, you know, pay us money or we'll, you know.
It's legit ransomware.
Yeah, this is, you know, private key and public key. They destroy one half of it. If you don't pay them, therefore you can't get your data back. This is not something to laugh at. And it's actually, I mean, it's twofold because it hits my business because I worry about things like that. And two, this hit my family. You know, a lot of times as techs and stuff like that, if it happens over there, you go, that really stinks and I'm really sorry for your loss. You know,
man, this is going to be a lot of billable.
Exactly,
hours,
and you. I mean, you try not to be. You know, you want to show sympathy, but there's a disconnect because really, you know, now it's not you. This is actually this hits home. This is my sister who lives a mile and a half from me that I see all the time. I graduated high school with this. Right. You know, with her. She's actually my wife's sister, for full disclosure. But I've known her longer than I've known my wife. I mean, I'm going on 25 years that I've known her, and. The bottom of my stomach just dropped because I thought we had it done, we had it complete, we had it clean, and she's like, now my data won't open. I'm like, oh crud. So like I said, if you aren't running Linux, if you're running a Windows box and you're on the internet, please check out Nick's Crypto Prevent. It's at foolishit.com. Just install it. Make sure you're protected. You know, if nothing else, it's going to block. It has a if nothing else, you may get some valid stuff blocked, but that's better than getting stuck with CryptoLocker.
A minor inconvenience is a whole hell of a lot better than losing all your files.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that I saw, since you're being close, I thought I'd bring this up, is that Cory Doctorow is actually coming down to the Portland area in July. July 8th, awesome. 9th, and 10th. He's going to be kind of in the same area, but he's going to be doing book signing and talking about it. When I first saw this, I thought, well, maybe he's just, maybe because it's the Washington County library system, which is, I live in Washington County, and it's this adult reading program. And I thought, well, maybe it's, you know, because they have kid reading programs over the summer where you read a book, fill out the form, drop in these things at the end of the year, we'll draw for a, $50 Starbucks card or, whatever. And I thought, well, maybe people are going to get together, read about, pick a book of his, read it, discuss it. And then I went and checked it and I said, oh no, he's actually going to be on site. So,
cool.
Yeah, so cool. I've never met him. And actually, I mean, I got to say this quietly, but I've never read any of his books. I have not.
Never have? Worth reading, dude. He's great. He's a great writer.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. So I'm assuming it sounds like you have.
Yeah. And honestly, you can't really go wrong with Corey. He's kind of... I don't want to go so far as to say he's kind of a guy that inspires me, but he's kind of one of my inspirations in that he made it work. He wrote a lot of nerdy books and kind of made a living doing it. So he kind of convinced me, among other guys, that was doable for me. So it was kind of a big moment for me to see that someone could do that. So I like Dr. Ao. Plus, Boing Boing's cool.
Yeah.
so there's that.
Do you have a preference of one that I should start with first, being a no?
Nah, not really. Nah, he doesn't have like one book. In my opinion, there's not like a War and Peace or a Gone with the Wind of Corey's works. He just writes a lot of good books, and a lot of them are a little on the shorter side, but they're all very readable and approachable. None of them are too like intellectual hoity-toity. They're just straightforward, obviously written by a nerd books, and
Got
I like
it.
That.
Got it. I did notice that on his website. I was there the other day. You can buy his stuff right from his website. Or you can go to, and his website is, it's craphound.com. So, Little Brother, Homeland, Pirate Cinema, he's got a couple other books there, but Homeland's good.
Homeland's
I was told to read
one.
Little Brother before I read Homeland, though. Oh, okay. I just thought.
Yeah, that works. I liked Homeland a lot. That made me smile.
All right, maybe I'll pick up that one. I need to buy them. But he does have audiobooks, and since I do spend quite a bit of time in the car, I'm a fan of audiobooks, and so I may be purchasing an audiobook from him, and you can purchase it right there. It's MP3s. I don't know if he's got. It's probably there's no. Yeah.
I don't think he has AUGs up there or anything. Does he? I don't think so. I know he releases a lot of his books DRM-free.
Right, and that's what I wanted to say that just before I wanted to look just before I said it because I didn't want to give out the wrong impression that. But it does sound like that they are DRM-free, so you can download it and move it on to other devices.
There's actually quite a lot of really good nerdy authors out there that are releasing their books DRM-free. Cory Doctorow is one of them. Me. And then there's, folks like Rick Dakin, who wrote the Geek Mafia series. You can buy his books DRM-free. Actually, he released a lot of his books under the Creative Commons, which is wicked cool. So you can get a lot of their books, on the store shelves, but you can also get them DRM-free to stick them on whatever device you want, which is just so really nice. There's a whole lot of authors doing it, but Cory Doctorow and Rick Dakin are two of my favorites.
I was looking
right
up Rick
now.
Dakin. It's something I had never heard of, but yeah, there's the Mafia ones. I'll put that in our chat room here so people can see it if they want to.
If you do not know Rick
Dakin,
I
do not.
He created, he wrote a whole bunch of role-playing game books. in the, I think, late 80s, early 90s. And then he co-founded the City of Heroes massively multiplayer superhero video game and kind of got forced out of the company, is my understanding. And so he went off and he took all of that angst of kind of being strong-armed out of his own video game company, and he put it into this Geek Mafia book where it's all about, like, basically taking down this video game company that forced this guy out using, like, crazy tactics. It's a fantastic, super nerdy read, and I highly recommend the Geek Mafia series. Just lots and lots of fun.
So are there only three? Because that's only, I'm only seeing the three that
The three Geek Mafia books. Yeah, I think there's just the three of them, which is two more than I thought there would be after I read the first Geek Mafia book. So I count it as a win.
Right. So you have Geek Mafia Mile Zero, and Geek Mafia Black Hat Blues.
And worth noting, Rick Dakin, also a real big Linux dude, wrote all those books on Linux and is a big anti-DRM guy. So you can feel really good about supporting him, you know? It gives you the warm fuzzies all over your various body parts. So I highly recommend, you know, when you're done reading my books.
So, well, yeah. Since I don't have a clue where, I mean, I could Google you, but what is your website where people can go and buy your books?
Lunduke.com, LUNDUKE.com is where you can buy my books if you want to buy them directly from me. At various points, you can also pick up my books from Amazon, and I've got a longer book coming out in November of this year. That'll be out in hardback, no less. So that'll be later on. But if you want you to just buy my books in DRM-free format, and I'm just going to put this out there, not so much as a plug, but as a call to action for people who write and release stuff. When I release my books, I send out the ODT file for it. So I send out the LibreOffice file. I send out the Word document converted for it. I send out the EPUB version of it. So I give everyone every possible format they could imagine. Convert it to your heart's content. And I wish more people would do that, because how many times do you end up not being able to read something because it's like in a .mobi format or something like that? I just wish more people would do that. So more people do that. I don't know how many people you have listening that are releasing books and that sort of thing, but do that.
Well, if I ever release a book, I will do that. Yeah, maybe I'll just come up with a couple books just to do it.
Just for the purpose of doing it. Just, you know, fill it with that generic Latin phrase everyone uses to test out websites. Just fill like 80 pages up with that and release that for 99 cents, but do it in like a billion formats.
Well, I'm thinking I may do it like Charles Dickens used to do and Stephen King used to do with The Green Mile, where you release like a little book at a time and then a little chunk like you did. And then maybe at the end I can sell the whole thing that you have spent, you know. And the only reason I know this is because when The Green Mile came out, my wife and I read that together. This is before kids. We would wait because we read the one together. And we go, when's the next one coming out? And then, you know, by the time you buy all 15 of them, you've probably spent quite a bit of money on all 15 of them. And then they release them as one big giant book for like $3.99 at Costco.
And then you buy that one too, though, because it's more convenient.
What do you think? I made of money?
I actually was thinking the same thing. So I was trying to figure out a way to do exactly that, where I could release little tidbits of things at a time and then compile it all together into a book. What I decided to do was I was going to do it with poetry. So I started writing limericks and just randomly, usually dirty poetry about Linux, because again, that's my world. And so
did you just
I wrote
say dirty poetry about Linux?
Yeah. I've been writing a lot of that lately. So, and then what I do is I release like half of it. So like as I'm writing it, I'll sit down and I'll write like 20 limericks, and then I'll release like 10 of them. And they're just filthy, dirty poetry about things like Gentoo and Arch, because there's not enough poetry like that in the world. And then my thought is then a few months down the line, I can go compile them all together, pull in some unreleased tidbits, and release a book literally called Dirty Linux Poetry. And yeah. So just in case you were wondering, that exact thing that you mentioned was an inspiration for me to do something like that, just to try it out and see how fun it was.
Did you release the book?
I haven't released it yet. I'm right in the middle of it. So I've got, after I compile everything together, I think I'm around 50 pages of just drippingly dirty poetry about Linux and Linux related software and Linux licensing. I actually have a page and a half long, poem that's more of a dirge, if you will, about the GPL, and it's just filthy. It's just absolutely filthy. But so theoretically, over the next month or two, there will be a book appearing called Dirty Linux Poetry, and we'll see if that actually works out. People might just look at it and go, that's the worst idea ever. Or they might just read the stuff for free on my website and not buy the book. I have no idea, but I wanted to try it.
I have a feeling there's probably a big subset of people out there that will eat that stuff up. You can take it to conferences. You can take it to...
That's my thought.
You need, and so OSCON is here in Portland. You need to have a booth at OSCON for that. And I bet you can put it, I don't care who you put it next to. You could put it next to the Ubuntu Kid group. You can put it next to the Fedora group. You can put it, whatever. Just just put it there and give out free pins or I don't care what you give out, but guaranteed you'll have an audience.
I think so too. It's ridiculous, but I think so. I think that speaks more than anything to the ridiculousness of the Linux community and how awesome it is. That's my personal feeling.
You will have hit upon something that somebody wants at some point with dirty Linux poems.
Right? I will save the world.
I'm at home compiling on a Friday night, lonely. I have my dirty Linux poems.
You know, it's funny. I was just realizing I don't have enough haikus in there. Like, I've got limericks coming out of my butt about Linux, but no haikus. And I feel like that's a underserved segment of our brains is haikus about Linux. So I need to remedy that, because right now I feel like I'm letting down the whole world.
Well, Geeksters, call to arms. If you use Linux, if you like Linux, this goes for we have another show on the Podnuts Network called Linux for the Rest of Us. If you're a listener there, yeah. Brian Linduk needs Linux, dirty Linux haikus. Don't send them to me. Yeah, send them to Brian.
Yeah, go ahead and send them on over. Yeah, mostly because I want to read them. So yeah.
Send them on to Brian. Maybe even zip them up. Maybe some non-open source compiling or zip program. Send them on over to him and just, I can't open this thing.
Now, man, I feel kind of bad now. Now I feel like I was a little too self-promoting. Like, I didn't intend to come on here and promote myself at all. It was just I really wanted to talk about dirty Linux poetry once we got into that segment, so I felt like, please, I had to. Okay, wait a minute. Just to balance things out, everyone who's listening, do not buy anything from me. You can go to my website, but I demand that you not buy anything from me. Otherwise, I'll feel like a shill. All right. That's all I had to say.
And didn't you minor in psychology? Is that what you...
Oh, man, I'm a college dropout. I didn't minor in nothing. I didn't get far enough to have a minor.
It was the reverse psychology I was going for there. Thanks for playing along.
You're welcome. I'm kind of dense. I don't really play along all that well. I pretend to, but I don't really do it that well. Okay.
So tell us about... I mean, I don't want to make this a Linux show, but that's what you do. I mean, you're waist deep in Linux. And so what?
Yeah.
So people who haven't seen or heard of your Linux sucks, Linux doesn't suck. You know, that's really where a lot of people know you from. Could you explain? I don't want you to do the whole thing because I want people to come see you. Because you're pretty much are you every year at the Linux Fest Northwest?
You know, I have been since, I want to say 2006 or 2007. I've been doing something along those lines at the festival there every year. And I think I've given the Linux sucks hour-long spiel for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years now. But basically, the idea is simple, is that Linux is glorious, but it also blows donkey chunks. And that the Linux community is so comfortable with themselves and with each other that they can sit down in a room and, you know, we'll have rooms where the people are just, it's just packed. I mean, it'll be standing room only. And it's not because I'm there and friggin' looking all gorgeous and oiled up and people just want to look at, you know, whatever, me shirtless. There's no draw for me to be there. It's the idea that we can all sit together and just bash unabashedly on this thing that we love so much. And we come out of it and fix things. And we feel constructive about it. And, you know, over the last couple of years, I've done the thing where I spend like half the time just ripping Linux a new one. Because, honestly, sometimes it really deserves it. And then I turn the tables and I say, okay, for those exact same reasons that it blows, those are the reasons that it's wonderful. You know, those are the things that are great about it. And we talk about it. And it's kind of a cathartic session where we can just... and just breathe and relax. And it's nice. It's a really pleasant thing every year. Sometimes it's the same people coming back year after year because they need that release of anger. And other times it's new people who get to experience it. And then we post it up on YouTube and, you know, it usually goes all crazy. I mean, we don't get like, you know, Justin Bieber numbers, but I think this year's got, between the various YouTube postings, like, I don't know, 70, 80,000 views or something like that so far. So, you know, not too bad. And it shows that just a lot of people need that. They want that. And it's not Windows users and Mac users that go watch those videos for the most part. It's Linux users, people that love Linux. And that's cool, I think. I think that's wicked cool that people that love something could do that. It's kind of like someone who's really into Yorkshire Terriers. Like, that's their whole life is pulling their little Yorkie dog around in like a handbag. Like, they just walk with them everywhere and they love nothing in life more than Yorkies. But sitting down and watching an hour-long video about what little jerks Yorkies are and how they stink and they just poop everywhere and they're awful. And then that same person just loves that video. Like, you wouldn't see that with those sorts of things. You wouldn't see that with Windows or Mac users. You see that with Linux users. It's some sort of a weird cultural phenomenon that I think is just right. Awesome. So that's in a nutshell.
And that brings out, you know, and it's great because there are so many things that people will disagree on that you can sit down with somebody and have discussions, whether it's politics, religion, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You go on. But you can have those same people can sit down and they will be in the same camp in Linux and we can discuss Ubuntu versus Gentoo versus Arch versus, you know, then you get into, okay, now you awesome versus GNOME 3. Versus Unity versus, and so you can discuss all of these and hate and disagree, but then sit back and go, yes, we all have valid points and we all hate this certain thing, but then we all like it because we all can load our own desktop, you know, load our own base distro and then load our own desktop and then tweak it to our heart's content. And then everybody kind of flips around their laptop and says, show your desktop. And everybody goes, that's so awesome. How did you do that? And you start sharing ideas because it's cross platform and it just works and it's great.
Yes. Yeah, you totally nailed it. Not this year, but the year before, we had two guys sitting in the audience. One guy worked for SUSE, and one guy worked for
Red Hat. That was the one that I attended. Was that? Yes.
Okay, that was the one you were at. And man, they just wouldn't shut up. And they were contradicting each other, and they were bickering with each other, and they were disagreeing with me at the same time. And I eventually had to lay the hammer down and make them be quiet. But the cool part about all that was these two guys are friends of each other. They are my friends, which is part of why they felt comfortable enough, like they could just start talking when I'm standing in front of a room full of people. But the cool part is they're friends. And on 99.99% of all Linuxy things, they agree emphatically. And even on the parts that they disagree with each other on, they would defend the other person to their death. Like, they may have disagreed. The SUSE guy and the Fedora guy may have wanted to just slug it out there in the room. But the reality was, they liked that the other person disagreed with them. They liked that there was opposing viewpoints and that they could work it out and come up with something new. And I think if they could come to a common consensus on a particular thing, they would both abandon their platforms and create one wholly new, glorious platform that would spring from the ashes. And that's just beautiful. I just love that.
Yes, I agree. No.
Sorry, I like talking about that stuff.
No, it's great. And that's why one of the things that I, you know, that was the first time I said that. That was the first time I had seen you. And I brought my son to that and I said, you know, we should sit down and watch this. And he loved it. He walked away smiling. Awesome. And this, so my son would have been 12 at the time. And
yeah, I remember that dude. He was cool.
Yeah, actually, I think he's home now. I'll have him open the door and peek his head in, but he'll be like, oh my gosh. Maybe after the show. But, that was his first Linux conference. And it's mainly because it was close. I've been to, since then, I've been to Ohio Linux Fest in Columbus, Ohio. I've been to Northeast Linux Fest, which is over in Boston. And so we've flown, nice. I've flown around. And that one is, you know, it's 6 hours from here by car. I can make it up there. And we hang out. And so that was his first one we went. And he really, 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 really enjoyed it. And he now runs Linux as his primary desktop. He does, and he really? Will get on there and he'll just say, just make me a disk. And I make him a disk and he installs it. And he, you know, I did not show him how to do, he's running Ubuntu, but I didn't show him how to, where the Ubuntu center was. He jumps into command line and he does everything command line. And so he, Yeah, he good kid. He really likes all it. Right. He's having a good time with it. But I forget where I was going with this whole thing, other than the fact that the conferences were a lot of fun, and listening to that one, which I distinctly remember because it caught me off guard that they were actually interrupting you, because I was like, oh man. But then when I turned around, because I was up close, and they were literally across the aisle from each other. So it was kind of funny to watch two people literally across the aisle from each other arguing. Like, it couldn't have been any better setup. It's not like they were sitting next to each other. They were arguing across the center aisle.
And oh man, it was, I felt so bad for them because the internet just tore those guys a new butthole. I mean, and they are, so the gentlemen's, I will refrain from saying their name in this just sure. because no. We'll go after them again. But they're two really great, really smart dudes, and they're friends of each other's, they're friends of mine, and I really didn't mind at all. I found it kind of funny. I liked that I had to kind of halfway throw a temper tantrum to stop them. But man, that video went up on YouTube, and I think that video has about 500,000 views at this point, the one from last year. And the comments on YouTube, which I know, comments on YouTube, they can go kind of south in a hurry. But they just ripped into those guys. They didn't rip into them quite as much as the guy that was holding the shaky camera that I had going on.
And he was the guy right in front of me. Like, I could put my hand on his shoulder.
Yeah. We had to fix that for this year's video. Otherwise, I think there would have been a minor internet revolt. But it was just amazing. I mean, not just hundreds, but probably thousands of comments about Fedora and SUSE, about not the companies, but those two guys, because I referred to them as Fedora and SUSE during the video, which I actually do work for SUSE now, which is kind of funny. But man, yeah, the internet just would not let them have any peace.
Right. And that was 2012, right? Was that? That one, because if I go back and
was that 2012 or 2013?
Well, if I go back and I look at Why Linux Sucks, jeez, the 2013 one has 132,000 views, whereas the why the 2012 has 467,000 views.
That and then it's about right.
Yeah. So
yeah, okay.
But I posted that in our chat room, and I'll definitely put on our show notes for people can see that too. But
and if anyone does want to go look at them, watch the 2014 edition. The camera and the microphone are so much better. it was so bad in years past. I mean, I felt terrible. So I founded a little podcasting network called Jupiter Broadcasting back in 2006, I think. And so we were kind of semi-pseudo professional, you know. We had sponsors and great studio equipment, and we had a friggin' green screen and everything. And then we go to the conference, and I swear to God, my co-host was like, "Yeah, we'll record stuff. I'll bring along all the good gear." I'm like, "Great. I'll do the presentation. You do all the recording." We get there, he whips out this tiny little handheld, one of those little pocket $30 Kodak video recorders, and just kind of holds it. It almost looked like he had Parkinson's while he was holding it. Like, okay, I don't mean to disrespect anyone with Parkinson's, but the camera was all over the place. So this is the first year where we actually put the video on a tripod. It was very
seven
fancy.
Years and you got it on a tripod. I'm not judging.
6 years. Six. Sorry, six. Come on now. Let's not exaggerate, Martin Obando.
We don't want that. We do not exaggerate on the Geekster program.
Anyway, yeah, so that's all that stuff. It's fun.
It is fun. And so if you've never been to a Linux conference or you know, interested in going to a Linux conference, go, because they are fun. You will have conference, you know, you have speakers from every and it's just great. I mean, a lot of the guys who are on this PodNuts network actually talk at conferences. And they are fabulous speakers, and I have many friends. And the reason I go is a lot of them is for what you call it's commonly referred to as the hallway track, where it's just...
Yes, the hallway tracks are always awesome.
And for people who have never heard of what that is, basically that's just standing around shooting the breeze. It's just standing in the hallway, that is the track, because every track usually takes place in a room or something like that. So you actually go to a track, you sit down, you listen to a speaker. Well, the hallway track is really nothing but blocking people from trying to get to where they want to go because you're too busy arguing about, you know, why Linux sucks or why Linux doesn't suck in the hallway track.
It's so great, man. Yeah, it is. I love conferences. I go to as many as I can. So actually this last year at Linux Fest Northwest, the same festival that I do the Linux Sucks thing at, you know, so I do work for SUSE now on the marketing side of things.
You've dropped that plug like seven times.
But it's part of this story. So we had a booth. The reason I say this is because we had
was
a booth.
It, was
and
it
we were
a
trying to figure
booth?
Out what to do in the booth. It was a SUSE booth because I don't know if you know, but I do some work for SUSE now. but we were trying to figure out what to do, and we were like, we could do cool presentations. And we said, nah, bag it. We just got some chairs. We just lined up a whole bunch of chairs, got a big thing for dispensing, like basically like green lemonade, because, you know, we're trying to be all thematic and SUSE-y about it, so we have to make it green. But just chairs. And we just sat down. And then we got a big roll of bubble wrap, and we're just like, let's spread out the bubble wrap from here to Kingdom Come to draw people in to sit with us. And that was it. No big screen for demos, no corporate-y spiel, just a whole lot of nerds sitting around. We didn't call it a booth. We called it the lounge. And that's what Linux fests are like all up and down North America, and even the Europe ones. They're all just great. They're just so relaxed. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, I remember seeing that when I was there. And it reminded me of when you go to your local fairgrounds or expo center for when you go to see the home shows. Where every booth is not really a booth, but it's a you know, the model home, or this is what your backyard could look like with an actual cherub holding a pitcher, and there's actually water, and, you know, that's what it was. You'd walk around and you'd see all these things, and then you get to the SUSE booth, and it was you guys sitting on lounge chairs drinking iced tea with your feet up, and you're like, "Welcome to SUSE, man."
Yep, with our stuffed animals.
With your stuffed animals, and this was before they made stuff legal in Washington. You guys are like, "Welcome, man. It's all good here."
Come on, dude. We're always pretty good.
You definitely are. You knew it was coming down the pipe.
We knew it was coming, man. We totally knew it was coming. All right, I hope that's probably not going to get me in trouble. That's the great thing about SUSE. I tend not to get in trouble for things. I appreciate that. Yeah.
So any news or anything exciting coming up with you that you want to share in cat out of the bag? Like, hey, I'm discovered how to grow an ear.
Dude, how epic would that be if I could get an ear? I've been going all this time without any ears, and I could really use one.
I meant like an extra one to give away at a conference. Like a
free ear. Like a free ear. Now, there's nothing really all that exciting with me. I don't know. See, it's my stuff is just random. Like, I all I really do is just sit around and talk about Linux for a living. And so, I mean, I've got my books and my stuff, which I demand, again, that people do not buy. Not if they're listening to the show. If you wait like a year and they're like, oh, okay, why not? Now I'll throw them a bone. Sure, but not right now. I demand that you not, because otherwise I'll feel like I'm selling out. I don't know. I got nothing going on. I got my podcast, got my stuff, you know, I'm just doing things.
Awesome.
just doing stuff. What's new with you?
I don't know. I just do my stuff. I got my podcast. I do stuff. But
I do have a book coming out in the fall, which will be a lot of fun. So I don't know if I can say the word again, but Linux is something naughty. If you go to my website and see that, it's a bad something.
It's
or
bad,
other
bad, bad donkey butt.
How about that? Linux is bad donkey. I wrote an ebook version of that, and then that got some interest and people loved it, which made me confused. But that turned into a book deal, and we're getting a big long version of that one published, like a really long version of that one published near the end of the year. So that'll be a lot of fun. So hopefully I'll get to do a little book tour around that guy. But otherwise, not a whole lot of crazy going on.
You can come down to Portland. You can sit with Cory Doctorow. You guys can fight.
Is he still going to be there? He's planning to actually just sit in a chair in Portland from sometime in July all the way through the end of the year. That's all he's got to do, man. He just sits in a chair all the
time. It's the epic game of hide and go seek.
Stupid,
like on Portland.
Cory. Come on, Cory. This is a call out right now. Get off your butt and do something for a change.
All right. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. All right. Well, we've been going on for about an hour or so, a little shorter than that. I don't want to take up all your day. You were gracious enough to come on to this show.
You were all totally awesome. You sent me an email. You're like, maybe we'll talk about neutrality and stuff like that. I'm like, all right, cool. And I just spent the whole hour just
Let's talk about that. So the reason I brought...
We don't have to. I'm not going to bully you into talking about neutrality.
The reason I brought it up is because...
I'm not Comcast.
The reason I brought it up is because, honestly, I don't know a whole lot about it. I mean, I mean, I've heard, you know, this person versus that person, and we as consumers should pay for something, but unfortunately, I haven't had a lot of time to do it. So I thought maybe if I don't know, maybe some of my listeners don't know, and being a journalist, you may know more than I, well, you probably know more than I know about it.
Sure. All right. For those of you who don't know, like Martin Obando, who's been living under a rock for the last few years.
It's a big rock.
Net neutrality is actually pretty simple. You know the whole old metaphor of the internet is a series of tubes, you know, that old thing. Well, imagine if those tubes were owned by all the major ISPs, and you are Netflix, and you want to stream some video, and it's going to go through those tubes. If you, as an ISP like Comcast, saw Netflix streaming through your tubes, you're like, you know what? I'm going to make your stuff go slow as a donkey unless you pay me $50 so I can take my lady out for dinner. Which would be kind of a jerk move unless you're the lady of Comcast and then you get a really nice dinner out of it. But if you're Netflix, you're like, dang, yo, I'm out $50 if I want people to be able to stream in HD instead of standard def because of the extra bandwidth it takes. That's pretty much the idea behind eliminating net neutrality. Because net neutrality is kind of something we have now, kind of, sort of, where everyone has an even playing field. They spit stuff out through the tubes and they all get equal amount of time in those glorious internet tubes of bandwidth. They're doing away with that. That's the goal of Comcast and Time Warner and all those guys. They want to do away with that and basically come at it with a strong arm tactic and say, hey, if you want the massive speed, you pay us some money when you go over our lines, son. And that's just kind of a mean thing to do. It basically says, so Netflix, who makes a bunch of money, or Amazon, who makes a bunch of money, can probably afford to pay the fees that are associated with the extra bandwidth. But Obando Computing and Brian Lunduk cannot, because we broke by comparison to Netflix and Amazon, and we need that speed too. So it's kind of a way of, net neutrality is really a stupid word for it, but it's a way of keeping the internet a level democratic playing field bandwidth-wise.
Got it. So if they increase the bandwidth, but if they increase the cost of Netflix on said provider, whether it's Comcast or Verizon or, you know, CenturyLink, whatever, is the company Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, are they going to eat the cost, or are we going to be charged as consumers? Are we going to be charged both from Netflix, Amazon, whatever? Okay. And then turn around and then be given an a la carte package from Comcast saying, well, if you want this, you're going to need to, you know.
Let me ask you this. Do you have Comcast for cable or,
I have
or
Comcast
anything right now?
For...
Has Comcast ever turned down an opportunity to try and charge you something? Right. So even if Netflix pays them for utilization of some extra speed on those tubes, and it's really not extra speed, it's just the speed they got and not the throttled sure. speed that Comcast wants to put them at, Comcast is still going to want to turn around and sell you prioritized bandwidth. They already do that sort of stuff. So it's really, you're going to get it from both angles, because Netflix is probably going to pass on some of the price to you because they're paying something to Comcast. And Comcast is going to pass on the price to you because they can, because they're Comcast. Excuse me. But really, basically what it is the ISPs are just looking to make more money. And I really wouldn't have a problem with that if it weren't for the fact that their margins are already quite high. So it's just kind of a jerk move is what it is.
When you look at things like your utilities, and I'm not sure if I'm actually playing devil's advocate on this or not, but if you look at things like utilities where you pay for what you use, you know, nobody doubts that, right? If I flush the toilet more times than you do, my water bill is higher. If I, you know, so yeah. Is net neutrality, neutrality just arguing something because it's change and we want to keep things the way they are? As a business owner, as a parent, it's hard to set a standard for things for a long time and then turn around and say, you know what, it's Thursday, I'm going to switch it up and this is what we're going to do. You can't, it's hard.
Yeah, right, kids love that.
So do my clients. It can't do that. Is that really what's happening? Does that make
kind of it's so kind of what you're talking about is really similar to the old European model where people were really paying per megabyte. You know, the people were connecting up to the internet and they were paying for their bandwidth, kind of like what we do with cell phone data now, where we have, like, let's say a 2 gig limit and we pay $10 a gig for everything after that. That's kind of how it used to be in large parts of the world for a terrestrial old Ethernet jack coming in from a cable modem or something like that, or an ISDN. They actually paid for the bandwidth they used. And the fees were, in many cases, not all, exorbitant. And part of that was that they had to pay for crossing over the line to North America or to Japan or to other places. And there really was only so many of those big, giant, thick cables that could pass the data along, or at least that was the claim. And so if that system does work, they could implement that here. But that's not even really what they're talking about, because in North America, we've got crazy infrastructure. I mean, just crazy. The amount of throughput we can shove around is just astronomically insane. And we're not coming close to really touching it in large areas of North America at the moment. Some spots, but not all. And so they're not really talking about charging you for what you use. They're basically saying, if you are a certain type of user or a certain type of content provider, we're going to charge you extra to utilize that same bandwidth. So if you're, let's say, a Microsoft and you need to push out a lot of software updates, well, if you're competing with, you know, a Time Warner or a Comcast or something like that, they're going to look very seriously at charging you to use that high priority, finger air quotes, bandwidth to actually get decent speed. Otherwise, you're going to use the slow stuff. You're going to use the internet slow lane, basically. And it's a different tactic, and it's kind of just more of a bullying tactic and less of a a la carte, you know, you pay for your food by the pound sort of buffet, which I wouldn't have as much of a problem with.
Yeah, I'm just trying to wrap my head around it, because I was finding myself getting a little confused on how we currently are, and then what they're trying to go to, and they're calling it. It's kind of like when you go to vote, and you check the box to vote against something. And I was kind of getting confused because it was this, right? It felt like it was like a double negative to me. And I'm like, wait a minute, yeah. You don't want net neutrality, but the word neutrality comes from, you know, where everybody is equal, which is kind of what it sounds like is, right, which we currently understand now.
Net neutrality is the good thing. We like net neutrality. It's just that when people talk about net neutrality, they talk about it in terms of the restrictions that are going to be put in place by people who don't like net neutrality. And then all of a sudden the argument gets all muddled and stupid. If anyone really wants to understand it, the best description I've found so far comes from a comedian, John Oliver, who has like a little HBO chit chat show. But it's a great little, like, 10-some-odd-minute net neutrality rant he goes on, and he gives a great explanation of it. Just search on YouTube for John Oliver net neutrality. Highly recommended watching, because he's very accurate, despite it just being a comedy shtick, you know? But it's a very accurate, very easy-to-grasp description of net neutrality and why Comcast and everyone else just kind of suck for what they're doing. So it's a pretty big deal right now. And the bad thing is, we've been talking about it for so long that people are getting bored talking about it. And so it's kind of falling off of people's radar a little bit more. And that's kind of a sad
thing. And because it's falling off people's radar, people stop caring, and then it's just going to get passed. And because
it's exactly it, you know, people stop caring. It's kind of like, you know, If there's, like say the NSA is spying on us, right? And we talk about the NSA spying on us, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, Richard Snowden. And then we kind of stop talking about it, right? You know, it kind of peters down a little bit. My dog's making noise in the background. Oh, good. She stopped when I threw a thing at her. So, but people stop talking about it, and then people stop. It does, doesn't it? I've done that with kids. I do it with softer things with my kid. Yeah. Just stuffed animals and stuff. Totally not rocks. So, you know, when you stop, man, I'm going to get a call from the Child Protection Services now. I totally don't throw rocks at my kid's head or hard drives. Like,
I was just suggesting he does regularly.
Directly at his kid's head with a good overarm.
It's an SSD.
It's light. Okay. It's light. It's an SSD. At least it's good then. Yeah, it's light. You know, people stop worrying about it as much, and then that's when bad stuff happens. It's when people become complacent and bored of a topic. They stop talking about it, and that's where we're at with net neutrality. It is a really important thing, and that stuff's getting shoved through, and the FCC, if they had fully adopt all of the details of what Comcast and all the other ISPs want, we're going to be in for a world of hurt, and it just sucks. It just really, really sucks. It kind of defeats the part of the purpose of the internet being this big democratizing force in the world.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the, I mean, that's something that as humans we have to fight, but as techs, you know, people in the tech industry, no matter where you are in the tech industry, 99% of the techs that I have found are very passionate. They're passionate about something. They're passionate about techs. And so we end up talking about a subject where everybody feels very passionate about, and we just shoot through the roof. We talk about it all the time at the water cooler, on the way home, on the way from think. We listen to podcasts about it. We talk about it on podcasts. And then all of a sudden it gets to this point where everybody's like, okay, I'm so saturated because that's all we've talked about for the last something. And then, But as human nature, we go, okay, now I need to step back. But then everybody steps back and we kind of go, well, what are we going to talk about next time? Oh, new thing of such and such. And we start ramping up on that and we go, oh, wait, that's right. We forgot about that. We were talking.
Oh, wait. Yeah. We forgot about the other thing and now we're screwed. Yeah, it's strategic. That's done on purpose by the ISPs, by everyone else who are trying to get this stuff passed. You get it out there in the news. You get the bad news out there. You get people stinging because it hurts. And you keep talking about it. And you keep talking about it. And you keep talking about it until everyone's bored of talking about it. And they're like, wait a minute, this has been around for years. It ain't that bad. I was worried about it before, but it ain't that bad. Oh, what's over there? That rock is totally ugly. Oh, wait, now they just passed a bunch of laws where my Netflix goes slower. That's the strategy. And it's working. And it's not like it's some nefarious secret plan. They're very, very overt about it. They're doing it out in the open. It's not like there's, you know, tinfoil hats or anything. It's just a strategy. And it's a strategy that sucks because it's winning. It's working. And so, you know, hopefully people keep talking about this sort of thing. And hopefully people write the FCC because the FCC is asking for comments right now about net neutrality and related topics. So I'm hoping people write into the FCC, write their congressman, and let them know that Comcast sucks. Even if that's all they say, it's just Comcast sucks. I think that gets the point across at this point.
Well, I wonder if those congressmen and congresswomen use Comcast. And the one day that they pass the bill and they go home and they want to sit down and watch the latest version of Downton Abbey or, you know, whatever. Oh, buffering.
Right? It's the problem is they're not going to realize what a terrible idea it is until they go home and it hurts them. And so they can't imagine it. They're like, what? I net neutrality with throttling and that doesn't make any sense. I just want to go home and watch my Downton Abbey. And I'd understand that because Downton Abbey is rad, but just the same, they can't imagine what it would exactly be because that's not the world they live in. I understand. I don't blame the Congress people. They're just stupid when it comes to this stuff. We need to help them so that they can figure it out. You and me, we're probably really retarded and stupid about the stuff they do. So they do that stuff. We do this stuff. And when it comes to this stuff, they just really need to listen to us because we know our stuff. That's just the way it's
well spoken.
Be.
See,
I use the word stuff a lot when I'm trying to be well-spoken.
It works because nobody knows because you know what? Stuff means something to everybody and then it's just a win-win.
Stuff is totally a win-win. All right. I'm done ranting about that. I'm sorry. I just totally hijacked your show. I want to thank everyone for tuning into the Brian Lunduke Show today. This has been a lot of fun. My special guest, Martin Obando, has just been a real trooper for hanging out with me today.
Oh, that's funny. No, it's my show. If I had something hard to hit, I would.
It's too late, man. It's too late, man. I've already called dibs.
1, 2, 3, not it.
Dibs.
Dibs on the podcast. All right. Oh, my gosh. Well, Brian, that's a great place to end off. And it's been a pleasure having you on and laughing and just having a good time. Do you want?
For sure, dude.
You too. I was, honestly, I was pleasantly surprised that you responded back to my email to come on the show. And you're like, sure, why not? When do you want to do it? Let's go. And I'm like, whoa. I was kind of thinking I was going to have to send you like chocolates and some flowers or something first. See, if you would have held out, you would have gotten chocolates.
So I feel so bad when I don't reply to emails. So I have probably, I don't know, 5,000 or 6,000 unread emails in my inbox. I don't reply or even read most of them. But, you know, so I'll scroll through. And if I do happen to actually click on one and read it, I always try to respond at least with a few words. And whenever I do, people are all probably like, whoa, you responded. And I'm like, yeah, why'd you write to me if you didn't think I was gonna? I mean, I'm still being a jerk because there's like 10 other people that I should have responded to probably, but I didn't. So I'm always amazed by that people email expecting to not get read and responded to.
Well, I'm glad you did. Yeah, I'm glad you did.
Related note, if anyone, people like, let's say Richard Stallman, if anyone feels like emailing Richard Stallman, he will read it and good odds he'll respond. So if you ever want to get a kick out of it, out of something, email Richard Stallman. It's fantastic.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Just want to put that out there.
Do you want people to email you or get a hold of you or just follow you on Google+, check out your book? I mean,
absolutely. People can do whatever they want to me. They know my website. It's over there. It's mylastname.com. They can follow me on all the social networks. I spend most of my time on the social networks because I do that for that company that I name dropped earlier a lot. So that if you want to know what I'm doing, that's a good way to do it. Great.
If you want to get a hold of us, we have some email, but we're going to save it for another day. And if you want to get a hold of us here at Geeksters, you can email geeksters@podnuts.com. If you want to call, leave a voice message, 707-6-PODNUT. That's 707-6-PODNUT. And of course, if you want to get a hold of me, martin@obandocomputing.com. All right, guys. Thanks for coming out, Brian. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for hanging on the show with us. And we're going to catch everybody next Tuesday. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, man. You're gonna release my family from custody now so I can stop doing the show, right?
D72 is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.